Welcome to Courage Cocktail. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Welcome back. We've been out of the studios for 2 whole weeks. The first week, we were closed out of the studio because of an ice storm. Last week, I was in the field harvesting fresh ingredients for future Courage Cocktails. Since we've been away, I wanted to update you on a few stories we produced. Think of this as housekeeping before we break open a fresh batch of Courage Cocktail. Remember our segment on music education in the Triangle? We ran 6 programs that featured opportunities for adults and children to continue their musical education here in RTP and the Triangle cities of Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. In one particular segment, we featured a local music hero. Her name is Mrs. Dorothy Kitchen. She started the Duke University School for Strings. Well, next month, in April, Mrs. Kitchen will be celebrated at the school's April concert. That big party is going on next month on April 26th. You can learn more about it at stringschool.duke.edu. It promises to be an amazing concert celebrating an amazing teacher. Do you remember the Magna Ready story with Maura Horton? Well, she's the talented entrepreneur who fused technology into fashion to help her husband and other patients who are living with Parkinson's disease. This April, the Michael J. Fox and Parkinson Foundation are spending a great deal of time raising awareness about Parkinson's disease. Head out to magnaready.com and you'll learn more of the updates and the exciting news and work that Maura and her company are doing. Next week, we will be broadcasting a very brief update from our Courage Cocktail Fellow. Her name is Amanda James. She's from the Harpswell Foundation, where she's teaching and honoring a leadership mentorship program for young women in college in Cambodia. She's based now in Phnom Penh, and because of the time differences, we're pre-recording our conversation, which will be broadcast next week. Stay tuned. This is our guest with Guts Resident Fellowship for the spring of 2014, and I look forward, and as I know you will be, to learning about her new life in Cambodia. Are you ready to break open this week's Courage Cocktail? Great, let's start. Our lens is turned toward travel this week. Well, spring makes me itchy. You know, no, not the typical allergic reaction to pollen. This is something deeper. Something that makes me spend time on the internet, looking at places I may want to see this summer or the fall as the weather turns warmer and travel is easier. Those among us living in the clutches of the polar vortex, oh, I bet you know exactly what I mean. Well, I have found for you the perfect fix. It's for your interest and your curiosity. Our guest today is Duarte Moraes. He is an associate professor at North Carolina State University. He founded a novel program that blends micro-entrepreneurs within the travel industry. Duarte has created a program called People First Tourism. And as we speak, and if you are streaming today's program in live time, please, you might need to want, you'll be curious enough to check out their website. It is www.peoplefirsttourism.com. That's 3 words, each spelled out completely with no spaces in between. In addition to Duarte joining us today, we have 2 guests with guts in studio who are playing the vital roles within the program as micro-entrepreneurs. They are Crystal Willett and Teresa Isley. Now, here's the backstory. When I attended recently a Raleigh Pechacucha, there was a talk presented there by a professor, and Duarte gave his talk. It's a 20 by 20 pecan talk. Now, for all of you who may not know this, it's 20 slides. Each slide is 20 seconds. Sounds easy. It's not. He delivered a killer pecan talk. It got my attention. And so that's how we met. Turns out that this gentleman is got his undergraduate degree at the Licenciatura. It's a university based in Lisbon, Portugal, and I'm sure he's going to correct my pronunciation. And also went on to get a doctorate in year 2000 in tourism marketing at Clemson University. What Duarte's special and current research interests are is people-first tourism, social entrepreneurship, IT for change, poverty, One Health, and community-based conservation. He's also fascinated by something called sustainable community development through tourism, community well-being and self-determination, endogenous community development, health and human development. I also have to include something that will be evidently very clear in our conversation. He's a brilliant relationship marketing person. He spends a lot of time building loyal customer relationships, branding communities, and something, a word I don't know much about, called eco-marketing. Well, we're going to pry open some new ideas on this show and welcome you, Duarte, to Courage Cocktail.
Thank you.
Wow, I read that, and I had no idea the extent of your history, of course, after being kind of slam dunked by that PKN talk you gave. Mm-hmm. One thing I did overlook, though, is that you are from a farming family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah. I'm from the north of Portugal, a province called Behind the Mountains. And that really defines me, I think, more than my degrees. Tourism is heavily reliant on tourism, domestic and international. And my region is the rural pleasure periphery of Portugal. It's similar to some of the beautiful rural areas of North Carolina. And I grew up hearing the promises that tourism would bring prosperity to our region, as economic prosperity would trickle from the commercial centers in Lisbon and Porto in the coastal areas. And those promises were largely unfulfilled throughout my time in Portugal. And so that's shaped my studies and then my research on how to use tourism as economic force to bring prosperity and equity beyond kind of the usual places of economic growth.
You graduated college in mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the economy like as a little boy for you growing up in Portugal?
You know, that question is posed to me all the time, because here in the U.S. we hear economic struggles in Europe. And honestly, I go to Portugal quite a bit. I spend about a month every year in my hometown. My parents have a farm, as you mentioned. We receive tourists, so my kids grow up spending about a month back home in Portugal, picking up eggs from the chickens and chasing the sheep and getting dirty. And I find that just like when I was little, people are happy. They're having family get-togethers and meals, and they're dressing very beautiful clothes and living a pretty happy life. I almost feel like they are immune to the economic issues that we hear about. And the interesting thing is that I have felt that. I've heard that here as well from some of the people I work with for P1T. I heard about it from Dwight Arrington in Madison County just a month ago with my students there. He said, you know, a recession comes and goes, but we draw our livelihoods from our land. And other than the price of gas, life keeps going on as usual. So in many ways, I've found home here, because many of the people I work with make me feel like I was in Portugal.
And listener, I want you to know that the P1T is your shorthand, right?
Yes.
For people first tourism.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to hear that P1T again and again and again. I just hear it coming up. Well, that explains so eloquently who you're being.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily fixed to place or time or culture. It's mm-hmm. who you're being now that mm-hmm. that makes this lens of your work and your academic focus
mm-hmm.
Make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to... I'm struggling with the bare bones. Like, tell us a little bit about people first tourism developmentally and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so through my graduate studies and then my early career, I was at Penn State. And academics are trained to examine problems in as sophisticated way as they can. The worst thing we can be called is naive. And so that takes dedication. And for many years, maybe about a decade, I focused on just that. I traveled around the world and researched how tourism fails to deliver equitable prosperity. And then gradually I actually received a grant to do a project to bring prosperity to a community in Tanzania. And I became hooked on making a difference, on finding a solution rather than just describing the problem in a complex manner. So I think both are important. And since then, I became increasingly invested in action research and actually finding a solution. And based on my research and on literature and ideas from colleagues that I have the privilege to work with, we decided that the way to create change was to intervene in the retail system, to actually connect tourists that want genuine experiences with entrepreneurs that want to share their life stories, and they need to make money and they're willing to receive visitors. And that's why we honed in on using IT to make that connection, to use a web-based solution. And so peopleforsttourism.com was born. And that was when I arrived here at NC State. NC State is strong in engineering, computer science, and we have a good team in critical social science. So we started meeting in local coffee shops in a good academic fashion and thought about all these issues and intricacies of how it should be designed, and then start developing new software that would make that website suitable to this vision. And we decided that there are many web-based marketplaces like Airbnb and Viable.com and TripAdvisor, but they only reach to entrepreneurs that are very web savvy and web connected. And we knew that we needed to reach beyond that. We wanted the website to be able to integrate people just in the farm or in their workshop with their cell phone. And so it's a new proprietary software that we call Web 2Sell.
Is that software. The letter 2 by any chance, or the
yes.
number 2?
Okay. Number 2.
Okay, Web 2Sell.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here, and in some ways it's really good. You can't see my jaw drop open. But you said so many things, and I took notes. And one of them was you want to interrupt this retail process. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the words, and I know our listeners are aware of this, but this disruptive mm-hmm. processes, and it's not disruptive as a child acting out at a concert. It's disruptive in a way that, man, we can do it better. So tell mm-hmm. me a little bit about this web to sell stuff, or mm-hmm. you said you were in Tanzania when you recognized that mm-hmm. you needed to do something called action research.
Mm-hmm.
What's action research? It sounds like a comic strip.
Action research is a new paradigm in which academics feel like the traditional method would be that we want to be disengaged from reality, unbiased by reality, so we can objectively evaluate the problem. Mm-hmm. Action research would posit that if we are disengaged from reality, then we don't really get to understand reality as deeply, and that we should be courageous to get immersed in those relationships and in those visions and drive change, enable change, and learn from it. So that's actually the relationship I developed with Teresa and Crystal. We are actually writing a paper together with a doctoral student, and actually our fourth author, the doctoral student, is going to Asheville this weekend to present in our behalf. So we learn from them about their problems and how this project is working, and then we change the software to adjust to the insight that they provide us, and at the same time they hopefully are benefiting from the project and, you know, growing as a result.
And it's a very nimble way of producing answers
mm-hmm.
because it's not the solo unidimensional perspective of an academic. It sounds yeah. to me as if it's a conversation mm-hmm. of thinking people
yeah.
and a shared experience this? How do we do things better? Well, you know, it's so unusual that this is happening now, because the radio program we're participating in now is, we always look for new medicine for vexing problems. Mm-hmm. And I say that always kind of laughingly, like, ha, ha, ha. But it goes directly to the heart of what you're doing. So on that, I don't understand then how did you move from action research and make a home in NC State? And I understand I think I announced it as a product or a department that's devoted to tourism. Mm-hmm. How does this work?
Yeah, being a tourism professor is kind of complex, because some of our work is pretty deep and critical. We look at how maybe tourism can be alienating to host communities, or to the one of my latest publications is, can people speak through tourism? Are they coming to the tourism stage and just performing an act that the industry told them to perform? Or are they speaking about what they care in life and what the meaning of life is for them? So all of us have gone to very staged, fake tourism destinations. And so we critique those things. And we need to fit in with folks in cultural anthropology, cultural geography, women's studies, and disciplines like that. But at the same time, we are in a very dynamic economic stage that is appealing to engineers and business, people in business and management. And so tourism ends up being a great, I end up being a great agent to bring together different disciplines. So in our team, we have a cultural anthropologist that would, you know, talk all day about the meaning of the word authenticity. And then we have a computer science scientist that we'll look at how to integrate different sets of data in a way that's meaningful and actionable. And we have a crop scientist that looks at the kinds of farming practices in Costa Rica. And so tourism can be that home that brings, it's kind of like a terra neutra, you know, where everybody feels like they're not going to somebody else's field, that this is also theirs. And so at NC State, we have this dynamic team, and I end up having the privilege to work with all of them, yeah. So People First Tourism reflects all those insights. You know, it's a beautiful thing.
Where do I begin? Okay, I'm going to sharpen my pen here. When you said to me that there's multiple, that industries are very fascinated by tourism now because mm-hmm. it is so, I can't use the word small C Catholic. It's just so broad. It's mm-hmm. so all-inclusive. And I think about it in this way. I can't help but, I spent a lot of time in business, and looking at this project, it sounds as if you can build deeper pool of meaning, mm-hmm. which is what you're doing, you're able to ultimately affect the product mm-hmm. in meaningful ways that will be necessary for the community and mm-hmm. owned by the community. You don't even have to sell it. Mm-hmm. So if you build your product with all these hands and thoughts and eyes, it's so much easier to build meaning and to have something that's easy to sell.
Well, I think you really honed in on what I think is my mission. My mission is to really just be a welcoming, to create a welcoming stage for all these great minds, not only at NC State, but as we grow in other institutions as well, so that they feel welcome, they can invest themselves in it, and then People First Tourism as a solution grows, because it couldn't possibly come from me, you know. Anything that I could own up to, any praise that I could own up to, would be that I enjoy to integrate different perspectives and get challenged by different fields. Since I don't really feel like I own or belong to any particular discipline. Mm-hmm. And so I love that, you know, that they are all chipping in to this monster, and that makes that project so rich, then ends up changing the lives or enabling the lives of these entrepreneurs that I love working with.
So now we will, of course, be talking to our micro entrepreneurs, but I need to just ask a little bit more about, when you say this program is growing, Are there other universities across the country, in the world, that are drawn into this model to trying to either model other programs or become a part of your program?
Yeah, I think everywhere we go and speak about the project, people have a aha, you know, this is great. Yes. This is what we've been talking about. And so I could be going around visiting different universities and they all get really enthusiastic. The problem is that the way that everybody is working very hard everywhere, at universities, at local extension offices and governments and NGOs, and everybody's already 110% occupied. So although there's a lot of enthusiasm, only a few then find the ability to invest themselves in the project. So at NC State, we are definitely the champions of the project. We've received several grants. We have about 80, maybe coming on to 90 entrepreneurs from the coast to the mountains.
And that's United States coast and to United States mountains,
just
or
North Carolina.
Okay.
North Carolina, yep. And then we have entrepreneur networks in 8 or 9 other countries. And there's interest from another 10 to get on board. But we want to do a gradual organic growth and so that we may have substantial critical mass of resources and interest in a country before we really allow it to get involved. And the same thing within states in the United States. I have a colleague in Penn State at Pennsylvania that is starting the project there. And there's the Black Belt Community-Based Tourism Associate Network in Alabama is also getting involved. So we'll have maybe a couple more states getting started with the project. Actually, we are starting to talk with business consultants, and they find that it's best for us to really invest ourselves in North Carolina, make it make sense and financial sense, and then we would grow gradually like that. So,
well, I do think that when your feet can teach you as much as your eyes. Mm-hmm. And when you take your feet someplace and you can absorb it locally, then I think that there's a tremendous research that you may not be able to get as much from, in the very beginning. Yeah. One thing I'm curious about is you have many team members. You have a university role. You have the micro-entrepreneurs, the ladies who are going to be joining us in the second half. But you also have something called agents. Mm-hmm. What is that role?
That was a stakeholder or a player in this system that was identified from the very beginning of the project. The idea when we start thinking about making a difference and changing the world through tourism, we thought, let's start a new NGO where we'll train micro-entrepreneurs and get them ready for tourism. And then we realized that there's a lot of organizations already doing really excellent job. And that kind of work needs to be done intensely. We do that in North Carolina. I visit with Teresa often. I come to bring my students to visit with her, and we interview Teresa. We write together. So we couldn't do that at the global scale. So how could we create a system that is that creates change, that it's scalable? And we felt like to do that, we should create a project that catalyzes or multiplies the field work of other organizations.
So you're learning from other people's lessons.
We are creating an IT system that will multiply the effect of their current work. So these agents, these empowerment agents, are NGOs, universities, even churches that are throughout the world already doing lots of good, lots of training, lots of capacity building. But they then, after they train their community members, they just wish them luck. And the tourism industry doesn't take that opportunity because...
Both of our guests are sitting here nodding their heads, saying, man, you couldn't be more right on this topic.
And we hear that, you know.
What's the next step?
Yeah, we've been trained to death, you know, and visited and do participatory appraisals and all this stuff on participatory development. But then there's no retail mechanism to bring those people to the market. And that's where People First Tourism will come. So we only allow entrepreneurs to be on the marketplace if they are vetted by an organization that has been training them. And actually, the better word is to accompany them, because training is kind of one way. and accompaniment comes from Pedagogy of the Oppressed in Brazil, Paulo Freire, for the more academically inclined audience. Mm-hmm. And his perspective is that it's a mutual learning process, just like what I had described in my relationship with Teresa and Crystal and the others. And so we are looking for those kinds of agents throughout the world that are accompanying the struggles and the progress of these other micro-entrepreneurs. And then we allow them to list them online so they can have access to conscientious and adventurous tourists.
This whole retail aspect is fascinating to me because, you know, sometimes we may not have thought about retail and tourism in quite mm-hmm. the same way, but of course it makes mm-hmm. total sense. So what I'm going to suggest is this. Listeners, get up and get yourself that drink. Get that tall glass of sweet tea or warm tea if it's still chilly here in Carolina. And when we return, we are going to talk to these two ladies. We're going to learn a lot about what it is they do, what it is they're working with at People First Tourism. And we're going to keep, of course, Duarte in the conversation. Stay tuned. Thank you.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio station? How about an interest in engineering or a computer background? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. Our website is wcomfm.org. To make a financial contribution, please click on the Donate button at the top of the main page of our site. Again, please visit our website, wcomfm.org.
Welcome back to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. You are listening to WCOM FM 103.5, your community-held radio station based in the heart of downtown Carrboro, North Carolina. We want to thank you and our sponsors for supporting our program and the radio station WCOM, Triangle Swim School of Cary and North Raleigh. Learn more about their programs at www.triangleswimschool.com. We also want to thank a sponsor, Authors Boutique, a company that helps with all things publishing. You may learn more at their website, which is www.authorsboutique.com. Now, in case you're just tuning in, featured on today's Courage Cocktail Radio Show is a whole new idea that is shaped around tourism that places humans at its core. Yes, you heard me right. We are speaking to the founder of the program, which is called People First Tourism, okay, and the founder, Duarte Moraes. and two guests who are participants in the Micro Entrepreneurs. To view their website and to learn more about this novel approach, please visit them at www.peoplefirsttourism.com. Thank you. Welcome all back. I'd like to introduce our guests. In addition to Duarte Moraes, it is Crystal Willett and, of course, Teresa Isley. Ladies, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting us.
Well, and Duarte, thanks so much. That beginning of this program was had extraordinary depth, and I not that I'm surprised, but I certainly recognize that the kinds of things that you're playing with have a tremendous amount of legacy and history, and I appreciate what it is you're doing. So we want our listener, and I want to understand more about the on-the-ground truth. So I might just kick this off with Teresa. Teresa Isley, tell us what it is you're doing for P1T, which is People First Tourism.
First of all, I'd like to say thank you for inviting us down. It's been wonderful thus far, and I'm still excited. So I've got to calm down just a little bit so I can answer your questions. But when the idea was first introduced to me, I kind of was in a wondering type mode. I'm like, what is this? Because I've never really heard of this concept before. And I also had a little apprehension about business online. So I want to know exactly what I was doing. How would that mesh with tourism?
And you may need to tell us a little bit about what it is you are doing.
So what it is I do is I've always been fascinated by the arts, and I have always been crafty with my hands and creative, and just walking and being in a creative mode, it just really turns me on.
Okay.
So one of the things that I really do is make jewelry. I love making jewelry. It has been one of the things that comfort me in the times when I just need to kind of sit down and take a step back and relax and that kind of thing. So in doing so, I remember the many times that I've done it and shared it with others, like my children. I always make them earrings for Christmas, and they look forward to that because each piece is original.
And listeners, I will post pictures, but Teresa is wearing the most beautiful jewelry I have seen ever on a guest in my studios in all the years we've been broadcasting.
Thank you.
She has told me she made it.
Oh, yes. often make, and I'm not just into the traditional pieces of jewelry. Anything can become a work of art. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that's nature and, you know, just whatever I can get my hands on and be creative with. But that's been a part of my life ever since I can remember. At my mother's knee, mm-hmm. she always made our clothes. And so sewing was something that I took up that really took me farther into different ideas and different medias of creativity and being able to do things with my hands.
Now, how does this connect to tourism?
Well, the story kind of ties in with how I was raised and some of the disadvantages of life that sort of took its toll or was present. We come from Bridgeport, Connecticut, where we lived in the inner city, and a lot of us were children of welfare moms. Mm-hmm. And single family homes and that kind of thing. So there was this disparity within the community itself and a lot of violence. So you had to try to find something that would keep you away from the streets, but also be valuable to your self-worth, the person that you believe you could be, because everybody has a dream regardless to what walk of life that they come from. And so early on, entrepreneurship became a real intriguing thing to me, because we sold lemonade, we did all kinds of things, but I realized that I could make things with my hands. And so I just used that. This is the venue that really encouraged my life and really made me stronger and really gave me an incentive for dreaming about the big picture, you know. But along came children.
Yes.
And so I always tried to make sure I kept that entrepreneurial spin and my creativity present in my life. So I shared that with my children. And one of the things that I did was we always sold candy or something. I made their clothes. There was always something. That connection was never broken with a creativity.
But, you know, you've told us, Teresa, this is fascinating to me. Not only do you make things, jewelry, lemonade, you have this history in your family watching your mom make things, but it's the sharing of you making the things.
Yes,
that
yes.
I'm beginning to catch a story here.
Yes, yes. That really is what the basis of what my piece on the tourism is about. It is really... The jewelry, those are things that I use to draw people in, to really, when they leave, they may have a piece of jewelry, but they'll have a piece of me too, because I try to share wisdom, you know, nuggets of things that will be valuable to them beyond. I want to stay in their memory. I want to give them something good that they can take and use within their lives, a seed, as you
yes.
might call it, to hand them a seed for their life. If planted, it would grow into something good, and I know that.
No, Duarte is smiling. Teresa, of course, my crystals are smiling, but I'm questioning myself here. When you describe this story to me, people come and do they buy the experience of jewelry making? Do they come and stay with you? How is it packaged?
They,
what's the retail here?
They do. They have the opportunity to come and learn how to make a piece of jewelry. And the jewelry is not the only activity that we have, but we're going to talk about that. We're going to use that one for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So what they can do is they can log on to the website. I offer classes of interaction, but one of the main things that is very important to me is relationships. So the first thing I designed in the tourism is a mother and daughter. You know, Bridget, we've got so much going on, and people get kind of distant from, you know, that heart-to-heart, breast-to-breast relationship. So the jewelry is just a way to bring you to the table, to have the experience of making a piece of jewelry, but also be able to develop those seeds of relationship.
And intimacy.
And
in
intimacy.
Relationships that get such short change
yes.
in this American lifestyle. So fast, so fast-paced. So there's so many interruptions. And
right.
even attention. Just listening to the cell phones and the conversations and the texting, just having something tactile to bring two people together. What a remarkable experience.
And going back to what I was saying in the beginning, why it was, I had a little tiny bit of concern about the tourism because it was web-based. And actually what I was doing, and Duarte can tell you, I had a lot of questions because I have children and grandchildren who are very, very tech savvy.
Oh.
And who sometimes you have to say, put that down, hear what I'm saying. So I was concerned that we were getting too far away from having those moments. So I want to really kind of go there again and create those opportunities.
Now, moving into this experience, let's talk about Crystal's work. Crystal, tell us about your farm.
Well, I started 2 years ago with my rabbit farm, and it's been an experience. I started with Duarte when he first started here, and I was excited because I'm a one-person farmer, so
you're
I enjoy
it. You're a one-person farmer,
yes.
And your name of your farm?
Is Chatham Rabbit, and I took that name in honor of, I don't know if you know the history of the Chatham Rabbit. Back in the Depression, there were so many rabbits in Chatham County that people were able to catch these rabbits and sell them all the way to New York, and they would market them as Chatham rabbits, and that helped Chatham County get through the Depression.
Wow.
So there were so many rabbits.
Well,
so,
that's an honorable name.
Yes. So I enjoy the chance to have other people come and see a working farm and be a part of it. They are able to work with me on the farm, and I teach them about rabbit care, and they actually get to hold the rabbits and cut their toenails and help me, you know, maintenance the rabbits. So that's been a lot of fun for me.
Well, how did you get involved in rabbit farming?
When I was young, when I was a teenager, we just moved to North Carolina. I started raising pet rabbits, and I would take them in a big Easter basket to the Raleigh flea market and set my basket down around a bunch of children, and there that was just attraction, and the children would buy the rabbits, and I quit doing that to go to school and everything else. And when I was about 20, I started again for one person. I was a grower for this one customer. Well, he ended up going out of business, so I again stopped doing that. About 3 years ago, I got laid off from my job, and I just decided I want to do something that's for me and that I like doing. It's not about the money. It's about doing something that I enjoy. So that's why I started.
It sounds your story evokes the same loving relationships that was in Teresa's story, which is, I do this because I love it.
Yes,
I do. You absolutely love your rabbits.
I do.
How many rabbits do you have?
More than 1,000.
And because I approach this with complete and honest ignorance, I truthfully don't know what is involved in the business of rabbits. So do you sell them? Is this a, how does that work? Is it?
I sell rabbits. A lot of them are meat rabbits.
Yes.
For food. Rabbit meat is one of the highest protein, lowest fat meats in the planet that you can eat. It's a healthy
meat. Like buffalo, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
And that awareness of where our food is coming from is growing, and people want healthy foods that don't have chemicals and steroids.
So it would be an organic product.
Close organic practice. And so I sell that. I'm a part of the 4-H program. My rabbits, the kids show rabbits. I sell to a lot of homesteaders that want to grow their own meat. A rabbit can be grown in an apartment. I mean, you know, it's a meat that you can grow just about anywhere. So it seems to be growing in that area. So,
what's the connection now between what it is you're doing and the people first tourism? How does that work for you?
The biggest connection is when the tourists come out, they want to be a part of the farm. They may bring their whole family. They may bring just their friends. They want to get their hands dirty. They want to hold the rabbits, take pictures, and they've helped me put up cages. I'm by myself. Some of the cages are 30 foot long. You know, they've helped me put up cages. Because the barn that I'm moving into, I'm constantly growing. I'm in an actual chicken house, so there's a lot of room to grow. So,
and this is all in Chatham County. Both ladies represent. Now, for the listener who may not know this, Chatham County is south. I think it's southwest. Is that right? Of Chapel Hill, the core of Chapel Hill. And it's a pretty large county.
It is.
So who are your clients? This is for both of you. Who are your visitors? Where do they come from?
My visitors from the People First Tourism, they can come from just about anywhere. a lot of them are from Raleigh, the big cities that they don't get a chance to be on a farm, or maybe they want to show their children, you know, what a working farm is like. So they bring them out. The children absolutely love the rabbits. So they, you know, if there's a rabbit running loose, they love to catch it. It's just, you know, they spend a lot of time out there.
Duarte, jump in. Come on, tell us.
Yeah, I was going to mention Crystal's example last week at the General Assembly to see the connection with local food movement. As we were driving into town, Crystal was like, oh, I sell rabbits to that restaurant. Oh, I sell rabbits to that meat store. And so I was explaining how they come to these restaurants. Angelina's Kitchen is one of our local supporters in Pittsburgh, and she has People First Tourism brochure. So when people come and eat food there, she say, well, if you want to visit the farm that supplied these vegetables, you can go to this website. And so people can eat local food, because local food movement is huge now, right? And they can now go visit where the food came from.
That, I mean, and that would be true even for the jewelry making. Yeah. It's that it's not just locally made. Mm-hmm. Now, this is mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. Now you've given us the opportunity to, well, not only buy it, mm-hmm. but also get a sense of how it's come to being.
Yeah.
Who are those humans behind it?
For me, that can be anybody. My bigger vision is for a multicultural center that speaks to opportunities for young people to learn a piece of themselves that they may not know, they may discover. You know, we have kids don't have as many opportunities to visit that side of themselves. So it could vary from mother to daughter, whole families, women's groups. It just depends on who's interested. But one of the other fascinating things that I found intriguing about People First Tourism, that there are people coming into our area who really don't know the people and want to connect to people.
That's so true. I mean, yeah. I myself, guilty as charged.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I just want to be a part of providing that opportunity, and I want them to be welcomed into the places that they visit and leave something with them that they can treasure.
What a beautiful sentiment. And Duarte, I know that our second half is showcasing our guest with guts, but can you help me understand something? You came up with this idea of the importance of, in the case of Crystal and the food and the rabbits, that not only do people want to know where their food is, but they want to know their farmer. They want to know the people, the families producing that.
Yeah, I think maybe if the audience, they're from urban areas, informed consumers, we know the environmental importance of where food comes from, sourcing locally, and we know it tastes better. Yes. And when we buy gifts, actually, we just made an order from my department, made an order from Teresa for a few gifts because we have a banquet coming up, and we used to source them from abroad for very, you know, meaningless and with a NC State logo. And this time we have sourced them from People First Tourism entrepreneurs that do crafts, from a group from the West to the coast as well. And I already have heard from my faculty how proud they are that we've made that move. So I think it's pretty intuitive. But the intriguing thing, or what I'd like to press, is that that's true as well for them, because both of them make things, and the other entrepreneurs grow food, make crafts, play music, but they feel like that's only part of the picture. They wish to have the opportunity to express the love that they put into the food product or into the craft. I heard that from Lumbee Craftswoman in Robeson County. The first year I was at NC State, she told me, you know, people look at these beadwork that I do and they can buy something similar at Walmart for $5. But to me, I learned this from my grandmother, and if I didn't make it, she wouldn't let me go to the powwow, you know, and that's why I learned to do this crafts. And I can't sell it for $5. It costs me more in, you know, just in materials plus the time. And we agree that if she had a chance to show and to express what it means to her, then it has a value added. So the consumers want that meaning, and the producers want that meaning, but just nobody was getting them in touch with each other.
And this is why I think of all the hats I put on you, this retailing hat to me is the crown jewel. Mm-hmm. It's actually putting retail, it's almost that the vision of saying these are the things that people want, need, and love. Why aren't the connections more apparent? Yeah. And what was the level of organization required to make it accessible to everyone, not just the internet savvy, you know, mm-hmm. people, but the people who may not have access to internet. And I can't ignore the power of these mobile phones in this process. You're mm-hmm. all nodding. Do you all receive orders or visits through your
yes.
text?
Yes.
So you don't go to your inside your house, look at your computers. What happens? in a typical example?
Well, a typical example is that we'll get a prompt on our phone.
An SMS text message. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then it'll track us to our website. Mm-hmm. And then we'll view an order there at the website, and we will give a response. For me, it's by setting up a schedule or setting up an appointment for that interested customer to come and have a session with me.
And that theoretically could happen in lightning speed. Somebody could text you, and the next thing you know, oh, wait a minute, you know that tomorrow afternoon, that canceled meeting? Let's go out and make some jewelry. You know? So there's this extreme ease of access and confirmation. And for your rabbits, people who visit you at the rabbit farm, Chatham Rabbit, is it the same deal? Do you get a text message?
Yes, I get a text. Well, I just get a text on my phone that it already they have the time that they would like to come, and I say yes or no. And if if the time's great, yes, they come out. And I believe they just pay automatically on PayPal. It's taken care of. So they come on out, and we just spend time at the barn. We don't have to worry about the money and, anything like that. So.
But you raised that specter. Now, Duarte, how does the money, where does the money go? What happens?
So that's another aspect about P1T, People First Tourism. It's a new kind of business structure. It calls a social business.
It's a social business.
Yeah, so it should have the mentality, the aggressive commercial mentality of a for-profit, but it passes most of the profit as much as possible to the entrepreneurs. And at this point, it's costing them 3%, which is taken by PayPal. And so we, in the United States and in Western Europe, we register each micro-entrepreneur with PayPal, but both these micro-entrepreneurs were already savvy and they already had PayPal accounts. Some we work with them to get them set up on PayPal so they can start making money on online marketplaces.
And for the listener who may not be all that familiar with it, I'm sure most of us know it, but PayPal is this intermediary bank, quasi-bank-like structure that lets you buy things with a credit card.
Yeah.
And then pay very specific people. And it's immediate. The payment, you don't have to wait for a check. The payment is pretty fast.
Correct. And we use this because we heard from initial fieldwork research that that the entrepreneurs wanted to have the commitment of the payment. Otherwise, they would rearrange their lives because there was this reservation. And then people would, maybe the weather changed or something came up and they would never might quite make it. So we have that feature as a request, as in, that shaped by the people we work with, these micro-entrepreneurs. But there's, we are learning that from, it's a movement essentially in microfinance. If you go to farmers market, you'll see a lot of little white squares that people just plug into their cell phones. It's called Square. And that emerged just a couple of years ago. So, because Visa machines, they require a monthly payment. So the small entrepreneurs have a hard time getting that kind of secure payment. So there's all these new mechanisms, online banking, cell phone banking, that we are now starting to work with something called Orange Money in all of Africa, and Vodafone Money, I think. So there's a bunch of these new companies and technologies that make small transactions of money possible at a very low flexible cost. So microfinance faculty are also injecting their knowledge into this project.
And I can't help but imagine not only their knowledge, but their appetite to see it working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that at action research stuff, like I've been spending a lot of time thinking about microfinance as an academic or whatever, and to actually see it working.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about fulfilling a life cycle.
Yeah.
I think that what I will expect will happen here is that you are at the avant-garde, the absolute edge point of building something that's going to go very, very far, very, very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful that you spent time with us on Courage Cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to shout out and say, are there any final thoughts here, ladies, about your work and your hopes?
My hope is that people will get a grasp of the concepts and just visit our website. Just kind of get to know who we are and, share it with others.
Yes, and of course that website is www.peoplefirst.com. diversetourism.com, and it's all one big fat word. And you're smiling, and you're such a soft sell. We don't have to sell this, do we? This is all about love. Yeah. Tell us now, Crystal. Final thoughts?
I would just like to see more people take advantage of this. There are a lot of people that I'm aware of that, you know, they want to come spend time at the farm. And I tell them to go through this program because, you know, it's just to help support. Because it is a... it's a program that, yeah, you just see how big this program can be. I would like to see more people take advantage of it and to come visit the farm. It helps us stay in business.
Yes.
It's another, you know, another product that we can sell, and it's important. You know, it's important that people, to me, it's important where people see where their food comes from or their pets or, you know, people who buy pets. They're afraid of where their pets come from. Is, you know, that whole thing. You can come and see the mother, the father, and
right.
And
you've just kind of completely removed that veil of confusion, or, you know, just don't know what's happening. It's completely transparent. Yes. What I love about that also is that you say, listen, if you've had a good experience with the jewelry making lady or with me at the Bunny Farm Chatham Rabbit, you're going to have a great experience next week when you go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And this is the branding that's going on, which is truly brilliantly executed. Mm-hmm. Duarte, I do have to wrap up the show. Do you have any final thoughts?
I think I feel like this is, for me, it's a highlight of my career that this is working out. I find it very meaningful. I love to see students coming to meet these micro entrepreneurs, and they tell me it's the most meaningful aspect of their college career. And I work with colleagues that tell me that they were starting to lose energy, and now that they're working with me and with these folks in People First Tourism, they're re-energized again. So I hope that that energy can carry on to the audience and to the public of Raleigh. This is the beginning of a movement. Let's all get on the website and book visits and give it a try and make ratings about it on TripAdvisor and Angie's List and get the word out and unleash the monster.
Unleash the monster. I couldn't have wrapped it up better than that. Wow. I hope you've enjoyed this program as much as I have, listeners. I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to thank Bill, our soundboard engineer. I also want to thank our community at WCOM-FM. By the way, we are celebrating our 10th anniversary for this radio station. And we always want you to understand that this is community-held radio and not this program, showcasing other work of other remarkable, gifted people. Couldn't be done without your support. So I want to thank you. Each and every one of you have come out and visited us. I also want to know that WCOM is habit-forming, as is Courage Cocktail. So I will be here next week. Please, you know the rules here. You bring the lunch and I'll bring the Courage Cocktail. Thanks for joining us. I'll be with you next week. Have a great week.